The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello and welcome to State of the Nation. I'm Brian McClain. Timothy Shea is out today on assignment. He'll be back with us very soon. Thank you for joining us for this live broadcast here at today's News Talk. You can visit us on the web, of course, at tntradio.live. Hello to everybody in the interactive live chat room over there. It's great to see you. Thank you for joining us. Always appreciate seeing the links and conversation over there happening on the website. And of course, if you've missed anything, you can go to the episodes link up there in the main menu at the TNT website. Now, we've got some things to cover here because on Saturday, the U.S. Department of Justice announced it's launching the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center. So, the launch of the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center will provide our partners across the country with valuable resources to keep firearms out of the hands of individuals who pose a threat to themselves or others. That's a quote from U.S. Attorney Merrick Garland right there. He went on to add, the establishment of the center is the latest example of the Justice Department's work to use every tool provided by the landmark bipartisan Safer Communities Act to protect communities from gun violence. Wow. What is this evil? All right, here's a quote from Thomas Massey. Quote, what the hell is this evil? A federal red flag center? We did not authorize this. Announced, of course, just hours after the omnibus passes, to end that quote. Let's see. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene said, quote, Merrick Garland just announced a massive red flag operation that the DOJ will be running using every spy tool the U.S. government has in order to violate Americans' Second Amendment. This comes right after Johnson fully funded Biden's weaponized DOJ. See what I did there? You can call it Bidenized. It's a new word. I just made it up to mean weaponized by President Biden. So that's what Marjorie Taylor Greene had to say. And of course, Dana Loesch commented, quote, this won't apply to Hunter Biden, illegal aliens, or cartel members that Dems fight to arm. This is an attack on due process and ignores existing law that provides a way to adjudicate someone ineligible. All previous tragedies were preventable without removal of due process. So this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. The timing of this is intentional, said Representative Tim Bruchette, Republican out of Tennessee. To read directly from the Department of Justice on this, the extreme risk protection order laws, which are modeled off domestic violence protection orders, create a civil process allowing law enforcement, family members in most states, and medical professionals or other groups in some states to petition a court to temporarily prohibit someone at risk of harming themselves or others from purchasing and possessing firearms for the duration of the order. That continues. You can read that at the DOJ website if you're interested in this odious piece of garbage. What we're looking at here is that in less than 48 hours, House of Representatives passed a bill with over $25 million for gun control. Then at 2 a.m., the Senate followed suit. So bravo, Republicans. Once again, you just keep siding with Democrats to strip the law-abiding citizens of their Second Amendment rights. Wow, I could not be more disgusted with our Congress, Democrats, and Republicans. Some comments from users that might be worth noting here. Gun control, didn't you guys just legalize illegal immigrants to carry guns? Treason by both houses. Those who voted for this bill are our enemies. This guy has turned out to be no better than the last majority leader. Another one. Democrats want to destroy America. Republicans are helping. This one I like. No politician is your friend. They are all enemies of the American citizens. And so, yeah, the House also voted. This was a 286 to 134 to fund $2 million+ for private security for members of Congress. So how's that strike you? They will violate your Second Amendment rights while giving themselves money to have armed guards. $59,000 to subsidize one of the gun control lobbies. And of course, the $25 million to reach gun control, like, for example, quote unquote, firearm retirement for seniors. So that all happened since I was with you last. And let me remind you, why not give TNT a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, and Gitter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So it's been a lot of back and forth with Trump's $454 million judgment bond. Looks like the latest is it slashed by more than half in an appeals court ruling. And joining us now to discuss is the director of the Center for Regulatory Freedom at CPAC, Andrew Langer. Andrew, welcome back to State of the Nation. A lot of stuff going on.
All right, let's go back to this DOJ thing. And you were just talking about what is the name of that the new program that they're talking about? What's the
It's the Extreme Risk Protection Order.
Yeah, but the DOJ program had such a weird, convoluted acronym associated with it.
That National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center.
NEPROR. It sounds like, you and I are roughly the same age. It sounds like how the G.I. Joe guys at Hasbro used to use bizarre acronyms for the MOBAT, whatever that was, Mobilized Battletech. I mean, this is where we are. But what's ironic is that DOJ just suffered, as I recall, just suffered a major blow last week in terms of the no-fly list. And so this idea that we would then turn around and hand them this power, and I know that members of Congress are saying we didn't hand them this power, but as you point out, they fully funded the DOJ in the same way they're fully funding the World Health Organization and our efforts there. They're fully funding a bunch of other things. I mean, when you hand them the money, right, we all talk about how the one thing Republicans have is the power of the purse. If we don't actually exercise that power, we can't be surprised when they turn that power against us. And this is, and you're right, the timing can't be denied.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like a Cobra Commander move also. and you know what, what else bothers me about this is, I've been looking around at, you know, the 2A community lately, and, I was about to give ATF a shout out, actually, because they have drastically reduced the amount of time to fill out a Form 4. So if you're getting, I don't know, an NFA item like a suppressor, for example, it used to be between 6 and 11 months to process that. And now it's down to just days.
So yeah, they can reject you in just days instead of months. No, that's the thing is, I think even at places like ATF and the same thing down at Customs Border Patrol, they sort of see what they see, the writing on the wall. They see what's happening here. And they see that, you know, it, regardless of what they want to do and how they view it all, there's somebody out there driving the train who is far, far more extreme than they are. And you're right. I mean, part of the problem with the 2A community is, you know, in the wake of the scandals, and I know, you know, that there are certain segments of the Second Amendment population that were not big fans of the NRA and the advocacy that the NRA did, but the shenanigans within the NRA and what happened in New York with the NRA, you know, really decimated the NRA's ability to get the word out there. And that's always been a huge thing. That's always been the NRA's great ability, is to mobilize massive numbers of people. You know, love them or hate them, they were always able to be out there and be the big dog in the fight. And you know, that's certainly no longer the case. And nobody's taking up the vacuum.
It's well, you know, we got Gun Owners of America, we got Second Amendment Foundation, good. we have a couple really good legal organizations that do good work. But you're right, that legacy that the NRA had, those mailers, the NRA's mailer list is probably like absurdly valuable. Absurdly valuable. They must have just so many addresses and email addresses. And I hope they're still at least getting the information out. I haven't really been following them since I switched to GOA.
Right. Right. And I don't know. And that's just it. I mean, you know, with their, anyway, to me, the writing was on the wall. Writing was on the wall. That's a Freudian slip. The writing was on the wall when the various NRA media outlets had to shut down. I mean, you'll recall the aforementioned Dana Lash, who you're talking about. I mean, Dana had a show on NRA TV and anyway, it was an effective tool. You know, we lift our glass to the advocacy efforts of the National Rifle Association. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And now it's over to Americans. You know, it's time to call your Congress people and, you know, figure out, did they vote for this? Why did they vote for this? You know, what do you think about Johnson? You know, he's taking some heat from Marjorie Taylor Greene now.
Well, I'm sure he is. I mean, listen, right now there's a real mess among the Republican caucus. And some of it is Johnson's fault. And some of it, of course, is the fact that Johnson essentially now has a sliver-thin majority in the House. I mean, my deep and abiding concern is the fact that there is no one effectively leading, right? We can talk about Donald Trump, or we're going to talk about Donald Trump. Donald Trump being the nominal, you know, leader of the party because he's running for president. But the reality is that there is nobody who is seemingly able to talk to the Ken Bucks and the Mike Fergusons of the world and say, "Hey, you know something? We've done right by you as a Republican caucus and Republican leadership over the years." You know, you've been in Congress, you made an oath, you swore an oath to your constituents. How about you not resign to take some post-government job? How about you wait until your term is done and then leave? That way, maybe we can continue to get the business of the American people done. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, yes, I'm angry at Johnson, but I'm angry at the Ferguson. The Fergusons of the world, the Ken Bucks of the world, everybody who's left office early, you know, the rats who've abandoned ship because they don't like the way things are going, and has left us all in a very precarious position. Every vote counts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and MTG called on Mike Johnson just yesterday to push for Representative Mike Gallagher, the Republican out of Wisconsin, for that expulsion from Congress ahead of his scheduled departure next month to allow his district time to select a new representative. I mean, that just makes sense. Like, why would – it's almost like a stab in the back for him to even try to wait it out.
And I'm sorry, and I meant Gallagher when I said Ferguson. I'm coming off of a weekend of Irish-American celebration, so I'm getting my Irish names confused. I apologize to the folks in Wakefield in the Bronx.
Indeed. But I mean, this is like, it just feels like a big stab in the back for Gallagher, and then for Johnson to not do anything about it. And, you know, MTG points it out really well.
Well, you know, this is what comes from experience. I mean, again, love him or hate him, I don't think this would have happened under John Boehner. I think John Boehner would have taken a great deal more leadership, right? Because with that experience comes the understanding of sort of how to push the levers of power.
Yes, absolutely. And what do you think about the Trump bond case in our last couple minutes here?
This to me is a recognition that at least there is some sanity left in New York State in terms of looking at these things. The reality is, of course, all of this stuff gets spun in the press. This means the most to Donald Trump, obviously, because it is his business and it is his holdings. The courts thankfully recognized that this is not some, you know, Donald Trump can't go to the bank and say, "Here, I'm going to cash in these chips, these monopoly chips and these properties. You got to give me money." It doesn't work that way. There is the reality of the financial world that has to be recognized. Listen, I don't even know if I've ever said this, Brian, on these shows. I have an aphorism I use. The most well-intentioned policies eventually bump up against very real realities. And Letitia James and her prosecution, this is the very real reality that she is now faced with. I don't think she has the best of intentions, but the reality is it's not as simple as sort of cha-ching, you know, hitting your ATM card and going down that road.
Right. Well, in her mind, she might have good intentions, but don't think so. Not in the legal mind, at least, that's sure. For sure. So it's down to $175 million bond now, and if he pays it, what happens?
It's easy. That's easy to deal with.
Yeah, no problem. Just write the check.
Here, I got it right now. Here, yes. But the reality is that in the end, this is all being done to sort of, this is where it hamstrings his ability to run for president, and God forbid, you know, the stuff hangs over his head while he's president of the United States.
Yeah. I mean, when he made his comments today, his comments were pretty good. He seemed really metered. And, you know, he said, you know, yeah, I've got the cash, but this is my cash to run. They're trying to take my money that I would use to run for president.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I'm glad it's down to a measly $175 million. You know, any of us plebs could get out of that one, right, Andrew?
Well, that's exactly it. And in the end, that's what they want. They want to frustrate his ability to use his own cash, because they know that's how he gets parity with the Democratic fundraising machine.
Exactly, of course. And then there's the chilling effect for the rest of us that watch this all go down. All right, Andrew Langer, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be with you on this fine Monday. I'll look forward to your next appearance.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Okay, there he goes. Andrew Langer with us right here on State of the Nation at Today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on Today's News Talk, TNT.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel. Ordered a coffee, but while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Our next guest is Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of 4 books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development with over 100,000 copies in print. His new book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure, was published on August 1st of last year, and he joins us now. This is Steve Gorman. Steve, welcome to State of the Nation. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Brian. Great to join you.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you on the program. So let's talk about California first. I hear I'm a California refugee living in the great state of Texas now. And so I keep a close eye on what's happening to friends and family and people back in California. And my goodness, the power and energy prices and fuel prices are through the roof right now.
Yeah, California is the most expensive state in the nation right now for electricity. I think they're number 2 or 3 last year. They were 2 behind Hawaii. this year they're slightly below Massachusetts, I think it is. But this last month they had the highest gasoline prices as well. And their prices have increased the most in the last 15 years, according to the Energy Information Administration, up 98% in 15 years. No other state comes close. And so this is primarily attributable to green policies. That is what is driving these prices.
Well, you know, they really take that stuff seriously out there in California, or at least it seems like they take it very seriously. I'll give you an example. There, you know, how there's long periods of drought. Sometimes the reservoirs get low. But last time, I think it was in 2018, 2019, all the reservoirs were very full, like 98% capacity, and they came through and just dumped like either 60 or 40% of that into the ocean in hopes of saving, I believe the term was maybe 1,000 rare salmon. So it's like, it feels like they place environmental policy over the people to the point of even drought.
Well, and then they had a drought 2 years ago, and many have said that was a 100-year climate drought, very, very bad. And so they were blaming that on man-made climate change. And then the last two winters, they've had these atmospheric rivers coming in from Hawaii, just dumping loads of rain, loads of snow, and causing a lot of flooding. And now they say that those are due to man-made climate change as well. So either drought or flood has to be due to your neighbor's SUV.
Of course, or the hamburgers that you eat, or, I mean, the air that you breathe at this point. It's like everything has been labeled, you know, man-made climate change. Where are you at with that generally? Like, what's your take on the push for green energy, ostensibly because of man-made climate change?
Well, I've written four books now. The first two of them were on the climate. The first one, it was climatism, which is a word that I've coined. And we had a couple president. It's an ideology, basically the ideology that people are causing dangerous man-made warming. We had two presidential candidates that were using the term, former President Trump and Mr. Ramaswamy were both using the term climatism. The second book was The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism, which I tried to be a little lighter on. But if you look at the data and you look at history, the first thing you find out is that today's temperatures are not abnormally warm. Despite what is mentioned in the press, we've had many multi-century long periods in the last 10,000 years when it was naturally warmer than today. And the second thing is that nature continues to dominate the climate. The effect of the solar system and oceans and the land mass. And so this idea that this trace gas in the atmosphere is causing dangerous climate change, it's believed by most. I'm giving you a minority position, but I don't believe that the evidence supports this whole idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things that they keep telling us, oh, the science is settled on this. But then anytime, you know, one of very many scientists such as yourself raise their hand and say, wait, no, it's not. Look at this data. Look at this data. Read this book. Read this report. Seem to be disinvited from, you know, speaking events. They seem to get deplatformed. I mean, we've seen this over and over again. Do you experience this stuff, too, for your position?
No, not too much. I'm pretty much on my own. I have my own professional speaking business. And so I'm not on a university. I'm not at a company. But there are many, many people who have been asked to step down. There was a biologist in England whose name escapes me in the early 90s. But he had been on 400 BBC shows. And he was the head of three environmental groups. He came out about 1994 and said, I think his name was Bailey or something like that. He didn't think wind turbines were very smart. He didn't think we really knew what was causing climate change. And he was boycotted, never got on another British television show, was asked to step down from his chairmanship at three environmental groups. And this is typical. A lot of pressure is put on people in organizations who come out against the prevailing ideology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We keep coming across a lot of things that don't make sense, unintuitive things that bump up against each other. For example, these giant wind turbine farms that we're seeing being built all over the eastern seaboard. Seem to be killing birds and whales, and they don't seem to be like they're going to provide as much energy as they say they're going to provide. I mean, what do you think about that one?
Well, they do. Every energy source has environmental issues, and they do kill birds. They do kill bats. I think the whale issue is still up in the air, although we do have a lot of whales washing up now in Virginia this year. I have a second home in Virginia, and we're here now in New Jersey. So they don't really know for sure, but there's a lot of mapping of the undersea below where they can put in these wind turbine towers using sonar and other things. And I think it is, it's following up the whales. So there are problems with all of these, but the biggest issue with, there are a number of big issues with the renewables. One is they use vast amounts of land, 100 times as much land for wind and solar as, for example, a nuclear plant or a natural gas plant. The second and the biggest thing is they're intermittent. You can't count on them much in the winter. You can't count on them much in the dark if it's solar or on a cloudy day. And so you can't really replace your traditional energy sources because of the intermittency. And so you have to keep the traditional sources, the wind, the natural gas, the coal and nuclear around. If you don't, you're going to end up with blackouts. So you end up building a lot more facilities, and it becomes much more costly.
Yes, yes, indeed. You know, I experienced the 2021 blackout here in Texas, and
it was
somewhat harrowing. I got to admit, not to complain. We did all right, but it was pretty amazing to see that all turn off. Hold that thought. I'll take your comment on that incident after a brief headline here with today's News Talk TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
It's hot tea. It's very hot.
It's hot news.
So hot.
Yeah, it's hot news.
Hot news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The terrorist attack at Crocus City Hall in Moscow on March 22nd resulted in at least 137 deaths, with ongoing search efforts for more bodies in the burnt remains of the complex. During a visit to Puerto Rico, Vice President Kamala Harris experienced an awkward moment when she initially clapped along to a protest song criticizing her in the United States, only stopping when the Spanish lyrics were translated for her.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
So, Steve, what did you think about that one? Because Texas has its own power grid. I was a little surprised, and it sounded to me like they actually shut it off because they hit some sort of red line with sources of energy.
Well, they did, and you need to shut it down. So in February of 2021, as you mentioned, temperatures got down to about zero, and they didn't have enough electricity. So they had to put in blackouts. And for 4.5 million people, the power was off for 72 full hours. And between 200 and 700 people died during that incident. That was and that's more than any hurricane in history, except one that made landfall in the United States. I actually communicated with a guy who was on the board of directors for ERCOT. Yeah, and he said that they had planned for a worst case situation like they had in Dallas and Fort Worth in about 2010, which was about 10 degrees. Even though I went to the National Weather Service and looked, and there were like 15 times when it had gotten down to zero in the last 100 years. Maybe they didn't think it was going to get cold anymore, but. They had almost no output from the wind and solar. The natural gas system froze up, and they literally had to shut down and ration the electricity, because if you leave the whole system up and you don't have enough power, the whole thing would go down and you'd have to restart the whole thing, which would take much, much more time than it actually happened. But part of this is that that Texas had closed a bunch of coal facilities. They put in a bunch of intermittent wind and solar, and we're seeing that around the country now. About again, the Energy Information Administration has keep statistics on the outages, the average outage time for each user in a year, 10 years ago, 2012, 2013, they were about 3 or 3.5 hours a year. Now they're running 6, 7, or 8 hours a year the last 2 or 3 years. So we're putting in these intermittent renewables. We are not putting enough electricity out there, and we're going to end up with blackouts, which is one of the reasons I wrote my book, Green Breakdown. That's one of the symptoms that are going, that is going to occur, that is going to force people to rethink what they're doing with green energy.
Let's explore that a little further. Talk to us about the coming green energy breakdown. What else do you see in that?
Yeah, so the world is driving for a thing called net zero by 2050. At least I should say the wealthy nations of the world, the United States, Europe, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and a few others, want to get rid of all coal, oil, and natural gas by 2050, if possible. And they want to replace it with wind and solar for electricity. And they want to capture carbon dioxide wherever they can't stop emissions. But this is beyond a reach out goal. This is an impossibility. It is not going to happen. What we are going to have instead is we are going to have much higher electricity prices like California is now experiencing. We're going to have electricity blackouts like they've had in Texas and California. We're going to have less freedom because they want people to get rid of their gasoline car and buy electric cars. They want them to get rid of their gas appliances, their furnaces and stoves and gas water heaters and put in electric. And so people are going to pay more for these things. And finally, we're going to have transnational energy shocks, as they call them, like Europe went through in the last 2 years. They had electricity prices increased by a factor of 6 and natural gas prices increased by a factor of 5 because of a low wind summer. And then finally the embargo by Russia with the Ukraine invasion. So I think people are going to demand a return to low cost, reliable energy. They're not going to put up with these sorts of things, but we are headed for all those those sorts of problems.
It sounds like a recipe for austerity to me, you know, after having experienced that 72 plus hours with no power and knowing what you just said about the amount of energy that the society uses now and, you know, how often it can reach 0 degrees. Even here in Texas, people think maybe that's not a thing, but it is. We do get cold winters in some parts here. I mean, how much, this may be more of an existential question, but how much austerity do you think Americans will have to experience before they say enough, reopen the coal mines, reopen, you know, build some new nuclear?
Well, that's hard to say. We haven't seen a lot of pushback yet, although California reopened a bunch of new gas plants. I think Texas is looking at it as well. But, you know, I wrote an article recently about how green goals for electric power are in conflict. So on one hand, they want us to shut down the coal and natural gas, which is now 59% of the electricity of the country. It's about 16% coal and about 43% gas. But then they want everybody to drive an electric vehicle. That's a big ramp up in demand. And they want everybody to get a gas set of appliances, another big ramp up in demand, particularly in the north. And then they're saying the government is funding all these green hydrogen centers. They want to use electrolysis to split water to produce hydrogen for a fuel. Well, guess what? That requires huge amounts of electricity. And then finally, we have this artificial intelligence revolution going on. All the data centers out there are upgrading to these high-speed processors, and that's going to increase their electricity consumption by 6 to 10 times. So this, again, is not going to happen. You can't shut down 60% of your electricity and expect to serve all these other things that are ramping up. And we are going to run into blackouts, or we're going to run into situations where people are going to have to say, wait a minute, you know, we got to do something else.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, here's a current event I wanted to throw your way out of Zero Hedge. The artificial boom and then meltdown of the EV market is a modern industrial calamity created by government, social media, and a bunch of other utopian stuff. But the CEO of Hertz, the rental company Hertz, Steven Scher, has been booted out due to a vast purchase of an EV fleet that consumers don't even want to rent. What do you think about that? What does that say about what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's a big black eye for EVs. And EVs hit a speed bump last year. The market still grew, but in the fourth quarter, EV sales were down for the first time. And they were also down in Germany for the first time. And so we have a situation where the early adopter phase is over. The folks that want a cool Tesla for a second car, et cetera. Now we got folks that, you know, they're in apartments and they don't want to run a charging cord over the public walkway to get to their EV. But as you say, the guy from Hertz just resigned. Under his leadership, they had committed to buy over 200,000 electric vehicles, not only for their own fleets, but also for Lyft and Uber. 100,000 from Tesla, more than 100,000 from GM. They ended up buying only 60,000, and they found that, yeah, people just don't want to rent them. Even the people that use EVs, they like charging at home, but if they're on the road somewhere, they don't want to mess around with having to take the time. Another thing that happened to them is last year, the price of used electric vehicles dropped 30% in the United States. And so they operate on used vehicles. You know, they buy vehicles, they rent them, and then they sell them as used. And so they had to write down all those electric vehicles, and it was like $250 million in loss. And then the third thing is they found out they're more expensive to maintain, often because, well, first, insurance is about 70% more than a gasoline car. And second, if they get into a little collision and they bump the battery in any way, then they've got to replace the whole battery because there's no way to repair one of those batteries. And it costs like $20,000. So the maintenance was higher. The insurance was higher. Nobody wanted to rent them. And so they've said, well, we're going to get out of this. And so really a big black eye for the EV industry.
It really is. And I think that the consumer market is also, you know, just watched this most recent freeze out, especially in Illinois, where it was just like all the cars stopped working. So how is that for a contradiction? This is right up your alley here. It's like you've got a system, a government, a whole, you know, Western civilization saying you're warming the planet up or you're cooling it down. You're causing all the extreme weather. So you got to switch to these cars. But that extreme weather you caused, your car may not work in it.
Yeah, that's a big problem. If you're in San Diego, it's probably okay. But yeah, Chicago, another black guy, all these people pushing the EVs around at the charging sessions. And by the way, and it's 0 degrees. So what happens with EVs is you lose about 20% of your range at 30 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when you go down to about 10 degrees Fahrenheit, your car literally will not charge if you're not in a heated garage. And so these people are spending hours at charging stations trying to charge their vehicle. And by the way, you're not supposed to run the heater when you're charging your vehicle. So they're sitting there freezing. It's about 0 degrees, can't get their car charged. By the way, we have a new quip in Chicago for electric vehicles. It says 90% of EVs ever manufactured are still on the road, and 10% of them made it home.
Perfect. All right. Well, you know what? We're almost out of time.
I'm not against EVs, but let's not have governments forcing them on us with the idea that we're going to save the planet if we all drive one. That's superstition.
Right. I do not understand why they won't treat it like they did when the hybrid cars were introduced. And it's like, hey, here's this great new option. If you're concerned about the planet, if you're concerned about your gas mileage, go buy a, you know, Prius or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, you know, that market took all the time it needed to sort itself out and sort of figure out, you know, who was going to remain with that sort of, you know, brand loyalty or you know, drivetrain royalty.
So anyway, listeners should pick up my book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. They can go to my website, SteveGoreham, GOREHAM.com. I'll send them a signed copy, or it's on Amazon, and there are eBooks as well.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'm going to get my copy from your website so I can get a signed copy. Steve Goreham, thank you so much for joining us here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk. We'll look forward to doing it again. This is TNT.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything, they're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
So the country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
From weather and traffic reports
to news of political developments,
we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide the news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
Too many journalists are paying with their lives.
We face exponential risks and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, surtout que je ne m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
Well, I must for a moment focus attention back to Russia here. On Friday, we had a very interesting discussion about those events as they were happening. And what we learned was that it takes time to learn things that you can actually trust in an event like this. The gunman, Moscow terror attack could be linked to Ukraine, says Putin, which you can compare that to this headline: White House comments on possible Ukrainian involvement in Moscow terror attack. And they say there is no evidence Ukrainian government was involved in the Crocus City massacre. Over back in Moscow, the gunmen have been identified as radical Islamists, quote unquote, but Moscow is searching for those who ordered the raid. The deadly terrorist attack on the Crocus City Hall, I'm reading from RT here, by the way, was a clear attempt to intimidate Russia and serves the interests of the Ukrainian government. Russian President Vladimir Putin said this today. More than 130 people, as you know, were killed at the concert venue northwest of Moscow on Friday. Several armed men began shooting into the crowd and set the hall on fire. Speaking with a law enforcement and regional officials Monday evening, Putin argued the atrocity fit the pattern of actions by Kyiv. Quote, "This atrocity may be only a link in a whole series of attempts by those who have been fighting our country since 2014, using the neo-Nazi Kiev regime as their hand," Putin said. He went on to say, "And the Nazis, as is well known, never hesitated to use the most dirty and inhumane means to achieve their goals." And let's see here. We had three more suspects have been detained. Three more suspects in Moscow terrorist attack have been arrested. security services have detained 11 people during the weekend with connection to the deadly shooting spree. Moscow's Basamani court has placed three more suspects allegedly connected to the attack under arrest. The detainees will remain in custody at least until May 22nd. A day earlier, the same court approved the arrest of four men who investigators believe carried out the shooting spree. And the three latest suspects, they've got their names here, Aminichon Islomov, Dilovar Islomov, and their 62-year-old father, Israel Ismonov, sorry, that's hard to say, are accused of being involved in organizing the terrorist act, according to the investigative committee there in Russia. So, and they say that one of these people was even dragged into court unconscious. So we shall see what that all amounts to. but yeah, that's going to be continually developing here. And switching back to the United States here, Dave Calhoun. Do you know Dave Calhoun? Does that name sound familiar? Well, he's the Boeing CEO. And Boeing president and CEO has announced he will step down by the year's end as the U.S. aerospace giant grapples with the fallout of the 737 MAX crisis. Keeps happening. You've seen us go over some of these headlines over here with regard to Boeing lately. It has been just a never-ending barrage of problems. Now, it looks like we have our friend, our returning guest here, retired U.S. Border Patrol Supervisor Eric Swanson, joining us now. Eric, welcome back to State of the Nation. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Absolutely. So I keep thinking about this TikToker viral video that came out late last week. A lot of things going on with that. The American public is very, very displeased to see an illegal alien come here and go viral on social media and encouraging others who are doing the same activity to squat and to exploit squatters' rights laws in this country. What have you discovered on this?
Man, I saw a loss of words. It's about as disgusting as when they showed the illegal aliens that were shot, the New York cops there and flipping off the camera and running their mouths, and we did nothing. It's disgusting. And, you know, you can't kick them out. My house, they squat and they have to go through the laws, but they're illegally here. So it doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't. I don't get it. I mean, what happened to like Castle Doctrine and all this stuff? I know not all states have that, but I mean, are we to now think that if you come home from a vacation, you have to, and you find someone, you know, burglarizing and vandalizing your house and maybe even threatening you with weapons when you walk in, that you're supposed to what? Just hand them your house keys? Or, I mean, it's absurd.
Well, you know, I go by that Jason Aldean song and not in this little town that we live in. I'm telling you, that ain't going to happen. It just ain't going to happen. But you're exactly correct. We have to go through these laws. And let's say you have property that has a bunch of acres on it and you see these people squatting. You can't kick them out. You have to go through the process. Could take long time. I mean, but they're illegally here. And the more this administration promotes it and no one does anything about it, the worse it's going to get. It's going to get to a level, even when the new administration comes, it's going to be difficult to stop.
Yeah. And these people are getting smartphones. They're being handed smartphones. They're being handed bus tickets, plane tickets, you know, meal tickets, vouchers, hotel vouchers, prepaid debit cards, all these things. And now I'm still trying to wrap my head around this whole 2A factor with regards to being an illegal immigrant here. Like we're seeing some really absurd things in that department too. So it's just like, it's really starting to feel, well, beyond starting, it just is apparent that they're trying to squash the American public. Where do you think this is going to go? Because it seems to me like if this becomes a viral event, you know, a viral happening instead of a viral suggestion, that we're going to have a big, big problem in this country.
Big, big problem, correct. And a big problem with crime and a big, we're already overpopulated. But you made something clear about the debit card. From my understanding, it's like $2,000. Well, guess what? They don't get checked. So what they're doing is they're going right across back to Mexico and coming right across. And they're using a different name when you're not getting checked from, I'm hearing 3, 4, 5 times the one person is doing that. And guess what that adds up? You know, 5 times 2 is $10,000. You got, who's paying for that? You and me and everybody else listening. And we're doing nothing, nothing.
Oh, it's so frustrating, you know? I mean, we've seen stories recently. We saw a woman get arrested in New York for trying to protect her home from illegal squatters and invaders. We saw a woman in Arizona get murdered and stuffed in a duffel bag to be found by her son later in a similar situation. I mean, it's just like the fact that they're arresting Americans who are trying to protect their own homes from someone who's here illegally and trying to exploit our ridiculous squatter rights laws is, I mean, it's not a good look, and I just don't see how this is going to end well.
Well, look at, I've seen, when I was working, I've seen cartel pictures where they do beheadings, and I can watch it for about a half a second because it's just so disgusting. But in their country, they get in trouble, you know, what they're doing, they, you know, we behead them. They come here, and we don't do anything to them. It's like, so that's what you promote until we start doing something to them. And until we start enforcing the law and get really strict on it, which might cost loss of lives in a situation, they're going to continue to come. You're not going to be able to stop it.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know anything about that young man that made that video, but I was watching an interview with a gentleman today. I don't have his name to hand. I apologize to him if you're watching, but I was watching this gentleman talk, and he worked, he ran a orphanage in Haiti. So once a month he would go to Haiti, he would check on the kids, you know, this kind of stuff. He'd bring a team of people with him sometimes to help out. He got stuck in Haiti just recently and had to get rescued. He had to get congressional help, like personal help from a member of Congress to get out of there and the 8 people that were with him. And he said that while he was there, he said something that really perked my ears up. He said that they had, you know, it's basically a gangland out there right now. It's a complete like apocalypse happening pretty much. But he said that that the gangs had taken over one of the prisons and released over 1,000 criminals. And it's just like 1,000 violent criminals were released. You know, this guy has to get helicoptered out. We've got people that are still stuck there that are going to get no help from embassies or anything like that, by the way. And over 1,000 more, you know, violent criminals are now out, gang affiliated, and most likely on their way here.
Okay, well, let's go even further with criminals. Let's go this little golf ball here. That's C4, let's say. Okay, and what's coming through the border? What terrorism? If you have this with your debt cord, what can you do with a little golf ball size of C4? So not only criminals, but there's been rumors just recently, the last 24 to 48 hours, about terrorists coming across the border. When you're not checking them, what happens? It takes one dirty bomb, and guess what happens? Mm-hmm. And then we're going to say, yeah. Oh, well, we should have, could have, would have, and we're still not going to.
And last week they were talking, officials, and I think Christopher Wray himself maybe, were even talking about infrastructure vulnerabilities, cyber attacks and physical, you know, kinetic attacks on waterways and, you know, things like this. Why would we not be expecting that, first of all, with a completely open system of borders and ports and airports? But at the same time, I mean, there's wars on multiple fronts right now. There's, you know, terrorism happening. What do they expect? I mean, it's almost like it is 100% like we're being set up for that Black Swan event that everyone keeps talking about.
Well, correct. And a leader told me way back when, and this is what the U.S. is doing right now, or at least the administration, you encourage what you tolerate. So if you tolerate it, you're just encouraging more. That's exactly what's happening right now. We are encouraging what we tolerate. And that's going to hurt us. And it's going to be another 9/11, which is going to make 9/11 look like a walk in the park. That's my plan.
Go ahead.
And with a tremendous amount of debt. And we still give, you know, we give, I think I said it the last time, $95 billion recently to Ukraine. And you think Ukraine is a happy, come on. Mm-hmm. And what about here? What about our own people?
Yeah, you know? Right. What about those people in Lahaina? They're not even allowed to go look at the ashes of the place where their business or their home used to be. And we don't know if they will be able to. What about the people in East Palestine? we don't know what's in their drinking water very well. Well, we know it's not good. And what about all the people just rotting on the streets right now? Never mind them. You know, let's get hotel vouchers to people that are here illegally. And of course, last week we had the news breaking of the Mr. Ibadi, who came from, I don't remember where, somewhere in the Middle East, via Sweden, via Ecuador, and then Panama. It's like, we're almost out of time, but you got about 30 seconds. Why are people on terror watch lists allowed to hop through so many different countries to get to our border, if you can do that in 30 seconds?
I don't know. Because Canada, for example, they have no visa. And they can fly, they get to Canada, and they're free to go. That's one huge thing right there. No visas. No requirements to get there. So that's why they're coming, and we don't do anything about it.
All right. Well, I wish we had better news for you. But Eric Swanson and I will be back to keep up on this story again real soon. Thanks, Eric. We appreciate you and everything you do. Thanks for keeping us informed. We'll look forward to your next appearance right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk. Stay tuned. We'll be back after these top of the hour news breaks.